This is Mitch McGarry of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht, and with me, the best Thunder writer in the whole world, Royce Young. Royce, how are you?
I'm very excellent. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm good. I feel like this is obviously a massive summer for the Thunder, and I feel like one thing that's kind of, even if it could even do this, taking kind of a backseat is KD re-signing, because it feels like more and more likely that he's going to, and that's kind of the first place that we're going to start. So I'm going to ask Royce several questions. I'm going to ask him to give me a percentage chance that something happens this summer. So, Royce, what's the percentage chance that Kevin Durant re-signs with the Thunder this offseason?
I'm going to say 97.8%.
That's very good.
Yeah, pretty high, right?
Yeah. I feel like
I'd say 100%, but it's like in Hero of Dark 30. I'd say it's 100%, but I know that freaks you guys out. So
yeah, I feel like all the suitors for Durant, it feels like they're all off the table at this point. And if it wasn't
right.
it wasn't like the season, you just watch Washington and Houston and all these teams just look like horrible options by the end of the season, and then the playoff run that included beating San Antonio. And the conversation after game one was Durant's going to San Antonio,
right.
And then now that's over. And then it would be so weird if he joined the Warriors at this point. So I don't even know, who are the other suitors for him?
That's what it comes down to. Just ask yourself a simple question. Just make a case for another team. Just sit here and try to make a case. And it's hard to do. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'll try to make a case for the Warriors, and yeah, you could kind of make one that he'd be going and joining the best team, and they'd probably give him the best chance to win, but he would also ruin his reputation. He'd ruin so much of what he's built the Kevin Durant brand on over the last 9 years. He'd be seen as a complete bandwagoner, front runner, and not only that, but he leaves behind so much of what he's himself has built in Oklahoma City, like a legacy, and to leave and to go to the Warriors, almost in some ways just like throws a match fire and just blows it apart. So the Warriors is and you could kind of do the same thing with the Spurs. The Spurs kind of make a little bit more sense practically because there wouldn't be as much, I think, tension or animosity because the Thunder didn't lose a 7-game series to them. But at the same time, if you try to make the case for them, okay, so Greg Popovich is going to be 68 years old, right? So, the word is that he's going to coach out LaMarcus Aldridge's contract. That's kind of what he agreed upon. So that leaves Kevin Durant roughly 3 to 4 years for Greg Popovich to be his coach. So if that's the reason he's going to San Antonio, that's not the best reason in the world. He's got Kawhi Leonard, who plays his position. They could probably figure out a way to make that work. They could probably play some sort of, inverted small ball with Aldridge at the 5, Durant at 4, Leonard at the 3. But then the Spurs have no guards.
Right.
So unless they're able to go sign Mike Conley alongside Kevin Durant or figure out a way to completely rework their roster, the reason the Thunder beat them down so bad in those final 4 games is because the Spurs didn't have any guards. They had no youth. They had no athleticism. So that's really not – if you're just going to compare I've said this before to a lot of people. Let's just assume Kevin Durant is a free agent. He doesn't exist on any team right now, right? Let's say that he plays somewhere in Russia and he's coming over to the United States and he gets to pick his team. The Thunder would be a team he'd want to pick,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Oklahoma City notwithstanding, the market is what it is, and maybe that's not a free agent destination that he would choose. But just in terms of the roster building, the coaching staff, the front office, the Thunder would be an organization that would be high on his list to choose. And then you throw on top of that the fact that Durant has an emotional connection to not only the organization but the city itself. And I don't know. It's just – if I try to sit here and I try to come up with a reason for him to leave or a case for another team for him to go to, I really can't do it.
Yeah. And the only one that like I feel like is like still standing is Boston, and it's because of like all these like hypotheticals. Well, they'll go get Jimmy Butler, and then they'll go do right. this and go do that. It's like, well, like show me that first.
Exactly.
Like if I can see that happening, then okay, I can see it. But I don't see the Bulls trading Jimmy Butler. I think that'd be really stupid. And
right.
You know, Isaiah Thomas is really fun, but. Like,
he's not Russell Westbrook.
No, he's like barely an all-star. I mean, he's an all-star in the East. He's an all-star yeah. guard in the East. I mean, I don't really see that. They have tons of assets and they're going to be good down the road, but.
Well, and the thing, yeah, the Celtics are, I agree that they're probably kind of the most threatening team out there. But then when you start making their case there, it's like so much of that rides on Brad Stevens, right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, they got Brad Stevens. Well, Billy Donovan's won 3 more postseason series than Brad Stevens already. So, and I know that Billy Donovan's got Durant and Westbrook, and he's got that built into him. And Brad Stevens is a fantastic coach. He's one of my favorite coaches in the world. But I don't understand this like incredible fascination with him as some sort of Popovichian coach where he's going to completely, you know, reinvent the game of basketball himself. When what's he been in? He's been in 2 playoffs. He's won, I think, 1 postseason game, if I maybe 2, 1 or 2. So I look again. I love Brad Stevens, but like I think this idea that he is like the coaching wonder boy that like we all must bow down to is maybe a little bit overstated. Or I guess in the sense that he's the best recruiting tool there is for Kevin Durant. That's a bit overstated.
Yeah, and if that is true, like Billy Donovan closed that gap in the playoffs. Like he proved to Durant over and over again, like I can make adjustments. I'm going to show Sam Presti that he did put together a versatile roster, and I mean they almost made the finals. Like they were just
they should have.
They were a Klay Thompson barrage away from making the finals, and you know I don't really know that this team has all that much left to prove to Durant.
Right. The thing is that I've told a lot of people the only reason Kevin Durant leaves this summer is just if he wants to go somewhere else. I mean, like that. Like if it's just like I've played in Oklahoma City, I've been there, I want to go play somewhere else. I'm sick of being in OKC. I'm sick of being with the Thunder. I want a fresh start somewhere else. Like that's the only case you can make for him to leave. Because if it's about basketball, and you know that's what did he say in his own exit interview when he was asked about what's important to him? It's about the people that he's around, and it's about the basketball culture and environment that he is a part of every single day. And to me, at that moment, when I heard him say that, I thought, wow, he just re-signed with the Thunder.
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I heard him say it. Because so he's going to go meet with the Boston Celtics, and Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens are going to make such an impression on him in a 4-hour meeting that Kevin Durant's going to say, wow, these people in this organization are better than the one that I've known for the last 9 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, if it's about the people, the Thunder are going to check that box. And if it's about basketball environment and basketball culture, there are other great environments and cultures out there. There's no question about it. Spurs, Warriors, Celtics. I mean, there are other ones really good. The Thunder are right at the top of that list. I mean, they've got players from all around the league saying about how this organization is different in that it's a basketball-first operation and it's a completely first-class organization. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see clearly, but and maybe it's almost in some ways the confidence that I feel that he's not going anywhere is a little bit ridiculous, but we'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah, Durant can't hang out with the Brooklyn draft picks, so that's a problem for Boston.
Well, yeah, hey, we got draft picks, we have assets, we have this is what we can do. I mean, somebody told me this. They're basically going to sell Kevin Durant on the Donald Trump line of everything's going to be awesome. You just wait and see. Like, just wait and see because this is going to be amazing. And like, I honestly think that Sam Presti calling Durant rational in his exit interview, mm-hmm. I think was kind of a strategic move to basically say that he's not going to fall for that type of stuff of the pitch of, okay, we're going to go get this guy, and then we're going to draft this guy, and then we're going to make this move, and then we're going to build a practice facility, and then we're going to build this. Like, I think Kevin Durant is smart enough to know that, you know,
what could be. There's a difference of what could be and what is.
Yeah, and the Boston getting the third pick is also like that's a huge hit to them. Like if they're going to be like, hey, you want to come play with Dragon Bender? I mean, like right. That's. I mean, if they got number one with Ben Simmons, like it's like, wow, that team is like that's a really intriguing team now because right. I mean Ben Simmons could be one of the best players.
But still, they'd be at least 2 years away, right?
It's
even with Ben Simmons. So
sure.
The only thing is if they'd gotten the number one pick, they might have been able to dangle that out there to somebody and then make it, you know, a huge blockbuster level move. I don't know. I'm trying to think of, you know,
even so, like you're not getting anybody better than Russell Westbrook.
I know. That's what I'm trying to think of. That's what I was trying to think of just now. Like who's a superstar player that they could add?
Like you're getting Cousins. I mean, like that's kind of scary. I mean, like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's no guarantee.
Carmelo Anthony?
The thing is, there's
like,
no guarantee. There's nothing there. You know, it's basically Anthony Slater wrote this, and it's the known versus the unknown. And Kevin Durant knows what he has in Oklahoma City. He knows the success that they've experienced. He knows how close they are, and that more than likely, if they just stick together, they'll get there. Versus the unknown of like, oh, I could go somewhere else. Maybe it'll work out. You know, there's no Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh to go join with right here.
Right.
That's going to fix it. And the other thing, you know, I think so many people have been kind of jaded by what LeBron did that they assumed Durant might do the same thing. But the Cavaliers situation in 2010 is completely different than what the Thunder situation is right now. I mean, they could not be more contrasting with how they are. So to me right now, Kevin Durant's decision, the one that he's going to be making over the next 15 days, is not going to be about do I leave Oklahoma City or do I resign. It's do I sign for a year or do I sign long-term? I think that's what he's going to be making his mind up about.
Yep. Another question about his resigning, the percentage chance that Mary Fallon is secretly trying to destroy the Thunder with her statement.
I know. That I don't know that Kevin Durant should consider joining her cabinet.
you would be like, do I have to?
Wait, so is this part of the contract?
Yeah, is this in the contract? You see him like desperately scanning his contract. Like, is this
right? This Mary Fallon thing really in there? Because I don't know if I want to do it. Yeah, I don't know if there's if somebody you don't want to attach yourself to in Oklahoma right now, probably Mary Fallon.
Yeah, it's really weird. Okay, next question. Percentage chance that KD signs the 1+1?
I'd say at the very end of the season, leading into the playoffs against the series against the Warriors, I would have said it was like 90%. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'd probably say it's 50-50 and maybe even like 40-60. Because this is something that I've got a column that I've been working on about it. And hopefully I can make the case more better than that. I'm very good at writing what I call. But Kevin Durant, if he signs the 1+1, it's practical. It makes sense. We all know what he stands to gain. He'd get about $85 million more in terms of the lifespan of his next contract, become a 10-year vet. I mean, everybody at this point is an expert about what that actually means. But if he signs long-term with the Thunder, he gets his max deal. He gets paid very, very well at about $26.5 million a year. And I think is it that for next season? Would that be his first year? I can't remember. Whatever it is, he makes a lot of money.
I think that's right.
I think it's $27.5 million is what he'd make his first year. So he gets paid. He's a max player. He gets all of his money. But the Thunder get a huge break in what they're enabled to do in terms of the long term.
Yeah.
And I mean, that could basically enable them to keep the whole core together in so many different ways. Instead of having a 35% max player, now you have a 30% max player, and you know, you're saving $10 million or something off your cap. So that means you can keep Serge Ibaka. You probably can keep Dion Waiters. You could have the flexibility to do something else. You may not have to trade Enes Kanter. So, you know, if Durant is going to kind of look around and understand that, you know, You can't hold it against a guy to get the money that he's able to make. I don't think anybody could point at him and say he shouldn't have done that. But for a guy that has a ton of money, I mean, Kevin Durant has a ton of money already.
Yeah.
That, you know, is that extra, you know, $85 million is ridiculous. Is that $85 million really worth it? But for him, I kind of wonder if it was like, you know, at this point, what is most important to him? And I think that there's a good chance that he's going to evaluate this and say, I just ought to sign for 4 years with an option on the fifth year to stay in Oklahoma City and be able to give this team a good chance to stay what it is. And because Kevin Durant, one thing he believes in is continuity. He is rigid about it. He thinks that playing with the same guys means a ton. And if in order to do that, he's going to have to give a little bit to keep all these guys together.
Yeah, he even had some quote where he said that money wasn't the most important thing or something right. like that.
Where he's talking about David West. That's been in my mind too, where, you know, people ask him about David West, you know, opting out of his deal and then signing the vet minimum. And Durant said, you know, doesn't mean everything. And at the time, everybody took that as, oh, he's not going to sign that 1+1. It means that he's probably going to leave. What I think he was probably really referencing, or at least maybe in the scope that we have now, as we can kind of look back in hindsight, is that, yeah, maybe that means that I'm going to leave that 1+1 on the table to sign long term and enable the team that I have to better chase the championship.
Yeah, and he fully understands like the extensions of, you know, Adams and Robertson and all these guys. Like all these guys are going to make a ton of money after watching what they did in the playoffs. He very much understands that. And if he didn't understand it, Sam Presti and everyone around him is explaining it to him constantly.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to be sure to. I'm sure Sam Presti's probably got like an email chain right now that is like, hey, you know, just thought of something, Kevin. You know, if you sign this, we could keep Deion Waiters for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's constantly texting him the market value of each player after every game.
Right. Right.
Okay. Next question. What percentage of you feels bad for Draymond Green being suspended tonight?
I'd say like 6%. I mean, I'd feel kind of bad for the guy.
That's quite generous.
Yeah, I mean, like he's not going to, you know, if they win the title, he's not going to be part of it. And that's, you know, he means a ton to that team. And, you know, he's kind of the heart and soul of them. And, you know, if they win tonight, they are the greatest team of all time. 73 wins and an NBA championship. So, you know, you can't dispute it. And for him to not be on the court about it, I don't know. I kind of feel bad for the guy a little bit.
percentage chance that Deion Waiters is on the roster next season?
I think that there are two ways to divide this percentage chance. But since I've already said that 97.8% that Kevin Durant's on the team, so I'll say 97.8% that Deion Waiters is too. Okay. Because I think that the only way Deion Waiters is not on the team is if Kevin Durant is not on the team. Because for one, Durant and Waiters are pretty close. Kevin likes him a lot. Deion likes him a lot. They get along great. And then, but if Kevin leaves, then at that point, Presti could kind of, you know, start to recalibrate the roster. And I think the first way to do that is to not tie up cap space in Deion Waiters. Yeah. So, that enables you to have some cap space, some flexibility. Maybe they re-sign him and then they try to use him to as a trade piece because, you know, Presti's not really big on spending in free agency. You know, that's not his model. Mm-hmm. So maybe he re-signs him just because it's a young asset to keep and then he could, you know, flip him for something later on down the line. But I think that Deion Waiters is definitely on the team if Kevin Durant's on the team.
So do you think that he and his agent will go the offer sheet route or do you think that they'll just negotiate right out with the Thunder just because they know where he's going to be?
That's an interesting way to go about it. And again, Durant is going to – it all is going to fall in line behind Durant. So, you know, I think that right now probably Deion Waiters, at least, you know, if we're to believe what he has said publicly, and I really think that there's reason too, but just because of the way Waiters has talked about Thunder and, you know, he was asked about, you know, would you be willing to come off the bench next season? And he kind of said, well, if I'm with the Thunder, yeah.
Yeah.
With anybody else, no. That's kind of what he said. So he obviously thinks about the Thunder in a different way. And I think that Deion Waiters wants to stay in Oklahoma City. I think he's genuine when he says that. So I think that there's a good chance that he may just work directly with the Thunder to find a deal. But again, I don't think that Sam Presti's going to be calling his agent and really getting on that until he's got something from Durant.
Yeah. So let's say Portland or Phoenix or I don't know that I buy any of the Deion Waiters to the Sixers hype just because it's like it's always convenient to talk about the Sixers because they have uber amounts of cap room but they don't I just don't see the real fit there. But let's say somebody gets crazy and they just say we see the potential in Deion Waiters, we believe we can help him to finish at the rim and we are going to max him out do the Thunder match that if Durant resigns?
Oh boy, I think that there is a number that the Thunder are just uncomfortable with. I think there has to be. You know, it, to me, you know, I think that, you know, $15 million a year is kind of that number. Like if it starts getting above that, 16.5, 17, that's when you start saying, man, are we really going to pay Dion Waiters this much money? Now, again, everybody's got to kind of recalibrate themselves to know what, you know, $17 million a year next summer is kind of like $9 million a year last summer, or $8 million. So, I mean, it's a whole different world. You can't be like, holy crap, Dion Waiters is getting $17 million a year. I mean, that's a ton, but it's in terms of the cap, it's a little different. So I think that there has to be a number where the Thunder say we can live without this guy for this amount, especially, you know, some of it is going to depend on Cameron Payne and if they really think that he's going to be able to add to the second unit what Waiters has been able to. But, you know, the way Waiters defended in the postseason and was able to kind of be that, you know, that quote unquote two-way player that everybody's wanted so badly. I mean, Dion Waiters was kind of that guy in some way.
He was.
So, I mean, like, you kind of – and it's not like there's a bunch of them out there. That's what I think people are like. You got to go get a two-way wing. You just got to go – like, okay, name seven two-way wings that are really good. Right. Like, it's not that easy to do.
Yeah.
And name five of them that are available to you that you can actually go – because don't say Jimmy Butler because he's not available.
Right.
You know, like, you know, like, okay, you want to trade Steven Adams for Jimmy Butler? You might. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to take Russell Westbrook to get Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Waiters has become that, and everybody's like, well, let's just let him go. Like, he's – I mean, who? What other guard out there can switch 1 through 5 on the Warriors' death lineup? Like, I don't know that there is one. And he proved that over the course of a series. He was plus 31 for the series against the Warriors. Like, he played well. He didn't score efficiently, but – to just play defense against them, like, that was impressive.
And here's a good player to watch. Here's a good player for Thunder fans to watch and see if he gets paid this summer is Kent Bazemore. Because Kent Bazemore is a very solid 3-and-D guy. He can knock down a corner three. He's long. He's, you know, he's basically what everybody – I think Andre Robertson's a better defender than Kent Bazemore, but I think that Kent Bazemore's kind of what everybody would dream of Andre Robertson being, especially on the offensive end.
Yep.
And if – and he's probably going to get – $17 million or something. Because I mean, the two way wing point is what big man was in like 2004, where it's just like if you can guard and you can shoot, you're going to get paid, and it's like that's just the way it's going to be. So watch what Kent Bazemore gets paid this summer, and then try to tell yourself that you can go out there and just get anybody, because mid level exception is not getting you the two way wing that you're dreaming of.
No chance. All right, next question. Percentage chance that Serge Ibaka has a bigger role in the offense next season?
I'd probably say 30%. I don't think he's going to have as much of a role, especially with the kind of the emergence of Steven Adams as a finisher. Because I think they're going to run more offense to Steven Adams next season. And, you know, I think Ibaka is probably going to be more comfortable in what they're asking him to do, but I don't think that they're necessarily going to be feeding him the ball more. I think that Ibaka may just have a better understanding of, you know, when to transport the ball from one side of the floor to the other, about, you know, when to shoot within the clock. I think that was a big part of Ibaka's struggles, is that in the past it was like, if you catch the ball and you are open, you shoot it. That's how it was kind of under Scott Brooks. It was like 19 on the shot clock, 6 on the shot clock, it doesn't matter. If you feel like you're open in the pick and pop, take the shot. With Billy Donovan, it was different. It was that he was kind of requiring Ibaka to think a little bit more, kind of be strategic about each possession, and, you know, basically turn down a good shot to try to find a great shot deeper in the clock. And I think that that adjustment was really difficult for Ibaka. He's not really like a basketball thinker. You know, he's not. He's so A to B. It's like, you know, catch, shoot, pass. Like, I mean, those type of things. Like, stand here, move there, this.
Yep.
And I think that kind of asking him to come outside of his comfort zone took him quite a while to get used to it. But and like Ibaka said, he basically turned into a complete stretch four by the end of the year, and that was kind of a difficult adjustment for him. But I don't – in terms of him having a larger role in the offense, I think it'll be about the same.
Yeah, I agree. What do you think about the storyline that he's been marginalized? What do you think about that? I just don't agree with that. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know that you could say that, because, you know, when you've got so many good players on your team, you know, you're kind of asking yourself,
what are you supposed to do with them all? You know, you can't get everybody 25 shots a game. You can't get everybody 15 shots a game. At some point, you know, guys are going to have good nights. Other guys are going to have bad nights. And, you know, you're just going to have to kind of work everybody in within that. Now, on another team, Serge Ibaka would probably be a focal point of an offense because he's a really good mid-range shooter and, you know, can do a lot of different things for you. But on the Thunder, I mean, he's out there to do a very specific job. And, yep. Have they marginalized Enes Kanter? Sure they have. You know, I think that in terms of his talent, you know, look at what he did against the Trailblazers when he got a starting job and he was able to play 38 minutes. He put up massive numbers. But in terms of what makes a team function and a team really good, you know, you've got to sacrifice and you've got to take some things away. So, I mean, I guess you could say, yeah, that's marginalizing a player's talents, but that's also fitting them in with what's trying to be a winning basketball team, not just a winning team, but a championship level team. And that really takes guys accepting the reality of being marginalized.
Yeah, I just never really understood that. Cause I mean, you could say the same thing with like every Warriors player. Like, is Klay Thompson marginalized? Right. Is Harrison Barnes marginalized? Like, no, like this is basketball.
Craig. Yeah. Was Chris Bosh marginalized? Sure. I mean, based off of who he was in Toronto when he was the focal point, I mean, statistically speaking and possessions used, yeah, of course he was. But was Chris Bosh a better player and more meaningful in terms of winning a championship for the Miami Heat? Yeah. And so what really matters here? You know, so, yeah, like, exactly. So I don't think anybody's going to really be all upset with that.
Percentage chance that Robertson gets an extension this summer?
I would only say probably about 15%. I don't think it's high. I think probably, unless there's a number there that the Thunder, you know, the Thunder probably have a number in mind that they're going to probably offer him. Mm-hmm. And Robertson probably is going, I mean, the Thunder are going to lowball. I mean, that's the whole idea of these extensions. Yep. You know, for the most part, you don't see him done unless they're a really big number because, you know, the Thunder aren't going to throw huge money at Andre Robertson. They're going to try to lowball the crap out of him and hope he takes it. And Robertson, especially with the way he played in the postseason, is probably going to say, look, I think I can increase my value big time season. I think I can be a better shooter. I think I can, you know, play a role in the offense. And everybody saw the defense that I played. And if I do it all year next year and I make second team all NBA, then you're going to be paying big time money for me. So yep. I think, you know, the Thunder are going to make him an offer, but I don't think Andre Robertson's going to take it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Percentage chance that people pronounce Andre Robertson's name correctly next season.
Boy, I'd say that's like 20%, because even the Thunder's PA dude gets it wrong. I mean, how does your own home arena guy get that wrong? I mean, it is like, it's so brutal. It makes me cringe every time I hear somebody get it wrong, just because I feel bad for the guy. Because at a certain point, you know you're not a household name in the NBA when nobody can get your name right, and you're a starting shooting guard, and everybody's still saying your name wrong.
I know, it's unbelievable. Like, some of the smartest people like in the business still pronounce his name wrong, and it's just like, come on, like they went to the Western Conference Finals. Like, we should be able to get this.
What I tell everybody is, just pretend it's Robertson. Just say Robertson. Yeah. Because if he had a T in his name, then it would be, everybody would say it right. So just imagine he's got a silent T in there.
There you go. percentage chance that Adams gets an extension.
I'd say that's 85% probably. I mean, they're going to want to lock him up as best they can. And anything at this point underneath the max is value for Steven Adams.
Yeah. Even if you max him this summer, it's a
right,
better deal.
Right. You save yourself over the long term. So, you know, at this point, you know, we're talking about a 22-year-old. He's going to be 23 soon. You know, look at what DeAndre Jordan gets paid. And at this point, who would you rather have on your team, DeAndre Jordan or Steven Adams? I think probably, you know, I bet the league would be split on that. And that's just right now. And, you know, DeAndre Jordan's, what, 6 years older than Steven Adams, so 5 years older. So I think that the Thunder are going to do everything they can do to try to get Steven Adams to take an extension. Because if you don't do it now and he comes back and he keeps building on it, which I think he's going to do, because I think Steven Adams is going to be an absolute monster next season. Yep. And you let him go to restricted free agency, somebody's giving him a max offer sheet. I mean, it's going to happen. So the Thunder are going to try to work hard, probably just get him to take a little bit under that level this year and see if they can get it done. You know, here's the thing about, and knowing Steven Adams a little bit, I've made this joke to a few people, and I'm kind of curious. It wouldn't surprise me if Steven Adams, the way his contract negotiations go, something like this. He like walks up to Sam Presti, and he says, "Hey, I want to stay here." And Sam says, "Okay." And Adam says, "Just pay me whatever you think is fair." Because that's how Steven Adams is.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me. It's just like, just pay me.
The thing that scares me about the Adams extension is not Adams, but the fact that Adams has an agent. And that he's just going to go to his agent and say, "Hey, you go do your job."
Right.
And that's where it's like, well, his agent's just like, he's like, "All right, well, there's no negotiations to happen here. We have a 22-year-old who just became a star in the playoffs, and you're going to give him every penny that's possible, you know?"
Yeah.
But if it is, if Adams just is like, "Hey, dude, like, stand aside. Like, I want to stay with this team for the rest of my career, right, and, you know, I'll take 4 years, I don't know, 60-something million." And
yeah, just like a fair number, but
yeah,
while you're also giving the Thunder a huge break.
Yeah. I mean, that would be incredible if something like that happened.
Yeah. This is what happens when you get close to a team and you start liking players and stuff, is that you see the best of them.
Yeah.
You're like, Steven Adams would probably say, "You know what, just give me the vet minimum. Yeah. You know, I just like you guys so awful much. Right. You guys are just so tremendous.
I'll take the, like, the taxpayer mid-level
in our lives."
Yeah.
Like, none of us would do anything remotely close to that in our lives.
Right. No, I'm not going to my boss and saying, "Pay me less so that you can give somebody else a little bit more." Right. Like, I'm just not doing right. that.
I like less money.
Yeah. Percentage chance that Enes Kanter is traded in the next 18 months?
I would say, man, that's kind of a tough one. I'd probably say 50-50.
Yeah.
I mean, next 18 months, so that's up the beginning of next season, right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, maybe even better than that. I think the interesting thing to watch is that we should have a new CBA by then.
Right.
And within that, there will be a new amnesty provision. Now, I don't think that the Thunder would, you know, they would very much prefer to trade Enes Kanter because he's got value rather than amnesty him. But, I mean, I put it this way. I don't see Enes Kanter finishing his contract in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. Like, financially, they're not going to be able to make it work. And at this point, he's kind of a luxury. And then you kind of really try to develop Mitch McGarry or Dakari Johnson mm-hmm. or somebody like that. But otherwise, like, this team is really equipped to play small.
Right.
And they have a ton of big guys besides him.
You know, you're going to want to start playing Steven Adams 36 minutes a game, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, interesting thing to watch is that is Adams' ability to guard fours, and that enables you to play him alongside Kanter. So that, you know, that development of Adams has been significant, I think, in terms of keeping Enes Kanter, because Enes Kanter has got you on the floor. There's no doubt about it. Enes Kanter does a lot of really good things for a team, especially a contending team. So to have him on the team is very, very good. And so Adams, I think, development as a versatile big man has really helped that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, it's gonna be hard to keep him, but this may be the last year that we see everybody together, because I mean the luxury tax implications are just gonna be insane if you keep him. What do you think the ownership mindset is right now when it comes to the luxury tax?
Well, they've been saving. I mean, there's a reason that they were quote unquote cheap last few years, is because they're trying to save for this exact moment of when Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant were hitting their primes and also hitting their contracts, and that the Thunder can sit down and they can say to them, "Hey, we don't got to get rid of anybody. We can keep everybody, and we can even maybe add people because we've got the money to do it." So this was always part of their plan, to put away money, and they've got a bunch of it saved up, and they feel like that they've positioned themselves where they want to be now. Does that mean that they can keep everybody? Because, I mean, we're talking about a tax bill that will be the highest in the league for the smallest market, and that seems a little bit outrageous. I don't necessarily know if that means that over the long term they're going to be able to just keep everybody, but I think that they're going to be able to keep the majority of them, and I think ownership is okay with that because they've kind of minded their own business, and they've kind of made sure that they've got the money set aside to do it. If they were, you know, if Sam Presti was, you know, hat in hand and walking into Clay Bennett's office and kicking the floor and saying, "Hey, Clay, can I get another $10 million to pay the luxury tax?" I think that could be different.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have the money already makes it a different story.
Yeah. Percentage chance that Alex Abrines comes over next season?
1%, I would say. I mean, maybe to me, you know, he's expressed his desire to be in Europe. I think it's going to take talking him into coming over here. And I think, to me, he's not a replacement for Deion Waiters. He's a replacement for Anthony Morrow.
Right.
And so, you know, you bring back Morrow on the cheap next year, and then you know, maybe give Arenas another year overseas, and then you try to go get him in the summer of 2017. I think Arenas will see a day in a Thunder uniform. Just knowing how high the Thunder are on him, they're going to do everything they can do to talk him into coming over. But it's a two-way deal. He's got to want to do it. And he said so far that he's really happy with being in Europe and playing in Spain. So we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think it's likely that he comes over this year.
Okay. Percentage chance that Sam Presti brings back Kendrick Perkins to the end of the bench?
Man, I've been kind of talking myself into this a little bit. You know, and I'll tell you this. They would have brought – if the Pelicans would have bought Perkins out,
mm-hmm.
they would have picked him over Nazi Muhammad. Absolutely. They would have brought him, Perkins, back 100% instead of bringing in Nazi Muhammad. And, you know, I think that, you know, if Perk doesn't get picked up, which there's a chance that he might not, somebody's going to add Perk just because everybody loves him so much and he has such a great reputation in the locker room. Somebody's going to sign him to a vet minimum deal. The big question for Perk is he willing to sit on the end of the bench and not play? Because Perk thinks he can play. I mean, he wants to get out there, and he still wants to play a little bit and get some minutes. And in Oklahoma City, obviously, that didn't happen. No. But if he's willing to just go ahead and just plant himself next to the Gatorade and, you know, basically be Mark Bryant's assistant coach, then I think that the Thunder would absolutely bring him back.
It'd be great.
Did I give you a percentage chance? So I don't know. I'd say
no.
I don't know. I'd say like 70%. I'd say there's a good chance of it.
That makes me really happy. We need Vanity back in Oklahoma City as well.
Yeah. We need Little Ken back, man. Little Ken is a baller.
Yeah. The Perkins need to be in Oklahoma City. It just fits.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Okay. Next one. Percentage chance that Josh Huestis takes over the quote-unquote singular role.
Boy, I'd say that's 40% maybe. Okay. They're going to give Singler chances again next year because the idea of Kyle Singler makes sense. You know, like the idea of the player that they want him to be makes a lot of sense to be in the rotation. You know, a guy that can guard multiple positions, that you know, doesn't need the ball in his hands, doesn't use a lot of possessions, and he can hit corner threes. That's a guy that you want in your rotation. Problem is Kyle Singler has not been remotely close to being that guy. On anywhere near a consistent basis. And Huestis could be that guy. You know, the thing about Huestis is, and we saw it in his limited time, is he does things that Kyle Singler can't dream of doing. And that's, you know, going up and blocking shots at the rim. I mean, you're not going to see Kyle Singler doing that. Or Huestis going up and rebounding in traffic. That's not something that Singler does. But it's going to depend on training camp. And I definitely think that that's up for grabs in some ways. Singler is... you know, just got more feel. He's got more experience. So he's got a layup in that way. And he's going to have, you know, a chance to kind of start over next summer or next training camp over throughout the summer and try to kind of get himself right and try to get back to being the player that he was in Detroit. But if not, I think that Billy Donovan has shown that he is open to mixing up his rotation and giving somebody else a chance. So I think Huestis has a good chance to get some decent minutes next season.
Are the Thunder high on Huestis? You were like one of the first people that I ever heard say anything good about him. I think it was when we were at Anthem a few months ago. You mentioned him and everybody was like, what?
I don't necessarily know that they're high on him. Like mm-hmm. they're projecting him to be some sort of like good rotation player.
Yeah.
They just see that. I mean, everybody saw it in the limited action. He's got some potential.
Yeah.
And the thing about Josh Huestis is that dude is very, very smart and he is an extremely hard worker and he's kind of the type of guy that you want to put in your organization because Josh Huestis is not out there fancying himself to be, you know, a star or Lord knows even like an all-star. You know, so many of these players come into the league and they're like, I just need my chance. I'm so good. You just got to give me some minutes and I can prove you that, you know, I'm going to be a lockdown starting two guard that, you know, plays 30 minutes a night. Josh Huestis knows he's not that guy, and he's not trying to be that guy. He's trying to do exactly the things that the Thunder want him to do, which is hit corner threes and play defense at multiple positions. Mm. Do those type of things, and you can play for us. And Josh Huestis is not trying to be anything more than an expert at those two things.
And I think that that fact has made him valuable, and I think that that's convinced him that he's somebody worth worth developing. He's not like a Grant Jarrett, which, you know, where it's like Grant Jarrett was out there and saw himself as being the next Ryan Anderson, instead of just saying, you know, I'm going to do certain things really well to just, you know, kind of have a place on this team. Because the Thunder don't need a new star. I mean, they don't need that guy. They need a guy that can fill a role, and Josh Huestis understands that. And he's worked really hard at trying to perfect those type of areas in this game. He has perfected the 3-point shot. Let me just tell you that.
Yeah. he shot well. I mean, pretty much every fan, if you took like a fan poll, like everyone would want Josh Huestis to play over Kyle Singler. But the thing is, they're very invested in Singler. Like, they gave him a pretty nice deal, and I think rehabbing him is probably on the checklist this summer for Sam Presti, because he should have played in the Warriors series. Like, they brought him in to play against teams like that, and it's just,
he should be a valuable player. He should be, but he hasn't been.
No, he has not. And it's a good thing Josh Huestis doesn't have an ounce of Nick Young in him, because it could be really awkward if he did.
Yeah.
Okay. Percentage chance that Cameron Payne can play meaningful minutes against the Warriors next season?
I'd say that there's a 70% chance of that, just because if you kind of look over time, that's kind of been the direction that this development structure has gone for these, you know, guards in his position. So, Reggie Jackson lost his spot, and it took a year, and he came back and he got better and was able to, you know, kind of lock down a rotation spot in the next season. And I think that Cameron Payne will probably be able to do the same thing, especially because, you know, unless something changes, there's no backup point guard on this team next year. You know, I don't think they're bringing Randy Foy back. Or if they do, you know, I think that there's a good chance that the Thunder don't want to use him as backup point guard.
Yeah.
Billy Donovan, I think, showed it in that Spurs series that they want Cameron Payne to play those minutes. They desperately want him to do it. He just wasn't quite ready. And you know, I've talked about this before. That was a horrible mismanagement on Donovan's part by the way he handled Payne, thinking that, you know, he could take, basically yank him out of the rotation, not play throughout the regular season, and then throw him back in there in the second round of the playoffs against the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, Billy Donovan, for all the smart things that he's done, that just made no sense. I think that was honestly Donovan maybe being a little too arrogant in the fact of, like, thinking that, you know, I've got everybody ready. That's something Billy talks about a lot, is that he keeps everybody ready and everybody can, you know, be able to jump in and contribute at any moment. He kind of keeps the whole roster engaged. And I think he was testing the limits of that a little bit with the way that he handled Payne there. But I think next season that Payne's going to play a significant part in the rotation. I think that we'll see him getting, you know, 10 to 15 to 16 minutes or so a night.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. He's obviously has a ton of talent. Like, he can shoot the basketball. His feel on offense is just amazing. It's really just defensively. Sean Livingston's not a good matchup for him. Like, and if he gets switched on to Draymond Green or Harrison Barnes, or even Steph Curry, where's the matchup for him on defense? I think that's like the biggest question. And I like some of his instincts, but I just don't know if he's going to be developed enough on that end to play a ton against the Warriors. But if his offense is worth it, then maybe he can be that guy. Okay. Percentage chance that Sam Presti goes after a free agent wing.
It goes after, 100%. You're going to go after somebody. Percentage chance that he signs somebody, probably 15% or 10%. And it's just, you know, there's just not a lot of room to add right now to the roster. And it's just, that's just the way it is with, you know, and it's funny how fans can get upset about these type of things. And it's been this way in Oklahoma City for the last few summers. And people are like, why aren't they signing anybody? It's like, because they've already done their work. They've already signed their people. Their priority is retaining the players that they already have. And there's just not a lot of room out there to go out. And, you know, it's like, again, you're not going to go out there and dangle, you know, the taxpayer mid-level in front of somebody and say, hey, you want to Oklahoma City for $3.7 million. I know that the Charlotte Hornets are offering you $11 million, but you can come play with Kevin Durant, and that's just not the way it works.
Come on, Jared Dudley, just take a third of your market value, please. Yeah, I remember whenever the Thunder missed out on Jarrell Wright, and it was the end of the world in July.
Oh, man. I know.
Yeah. It's,
did he end up getting picked up by somebody this year?
He did by the Heat, I believe.
Was it by the Heat? Yeah. I was kind of surprised the Thunder didn't pursue him.
I was too.
It kind of made a little sense.
It did. But Nazi Muhammad, I guess, was the key to unlocking everything.
He made too much sense.
Yeah.
Hey, I will say he paid his worth with his exit interview.
I was going to say that. He was amazing. He was so good. It seriously was worth every penny that they paid him just to do that.
Yeah.
He was awesome. So the Thunder, have they finalized a contract with Adrian Griffin yet?
No, I don't think it's not been officially announced, but it's agreed upon. It's happened for sure.
Okay. What's the percentage chance that he helps improve the regular season defense?
I don't know if you could put a percentage chance on that because I think they're going to improve just inherently. You know, they made such a stride in the postseason, and I think that they began to figure themselves out to some degree. Obviously, everybody's probably really excited because Adrian Griffin's a pupil of Tom Thibodeau and, can bring some of those principles maybe over. But, if you see defensive improvement next year, I don't think you can just sit there and say, well, it's because of Adrian Griffin.
Sure.
I think the trajectory of the team was headed in that direction anyway. Now, he can obviously add some value and help them out. But, in terms of him directly helping them, I mean, it's probably like a 20% chance.
Yeah. Do you think that we see any sort of regression from what we saw basically from like game 4 of the Spurs series on? Do you think we see any sort of regression? Or I guess it would be game 5 of the Spurs
series. Yeah, I mean, sure, I think you will. There are going to be ups and downs. I mean, even the Warriors this year, they took some steps back and they had some bad weeks on defense. It's just, the nature of the beast. It's kind of funny to me because like sitting here right now and, being in the middle of the Western Conference Finals and how important those games are. And then you kind of sit there and even as, a writer or even as a fan, it's like, can you really try to imagine yourself getting up for a game in November, against the Kings? It's like, yeah. Oh man, the game's not like who even cares about that? It's not, right. I want to be back in the Western Finals. And players feel that way too. I mean, they feel that type of thing too. And, there's an expectation for them to bring it every night, but that's just not realistic. So, I think that they will probably take some steps back. I don't think that you could sit here and say that they're going to be a top 5 defensive team next year. But I think that they'll be more consistently good.
Yeah. So we're less than a couple weeks away from the NBA draft. What are the percentage chance that Sam Presti gets into this draft, either in the first or second round?
I think in the second round, there's probably like an 80% chance. I think that they're going to try to get a pick just because they want young players in the program. And they want to keep adding to it. Maybe that means even an international player that they want to go grab. I mean, they're going to probably try to get somebody. Now, getting into the first round, I mean, that's probably 10% or maybe even less, 5%, because you just have to ask yourself, what do you have to trade? And everybody's going to say Mitch McGarry. But who's going to take Mitch McGarry for their first round pick right
now?
I mean, McGarry's got some trade value, and I think he's got some teams probably intrigued a little bit about, the player that he could be. But, we're talking about a guy that, basically fell out of shape, didn't have a chance in the rotation, and had to take a leave of absence from the team, and that's not a good look. So I don't know what team out there would say, yeah, we'll give you our 27th overall pick for Mitch McGarry. That just doesn't seem likely.
Yeah.
Because other than that, who do you trade? I mean, you're going to trade Cameron Payne?
No. So, I mean, if they'd be willing to like let go of like the 2020 pick, if like the Nuggets, the Suns and the Celtics all have 3 first-round picks, and they're probably not going to all make all 3 of those picks. So I wonder if you just say, we'll give you our future first for yours because we really like so-and-so, and we know we can get him there.
With heavy protections on him or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that might make some sense, but
yeah, it'll be hard for the Thunder to get in the first round because a lot of people are going to want to get in the first round just because these contracts are just ridiculous value,
right?
And obviously, Presti wants to get those, but I think everybody else does too.
Yeah, they absolutely want a first round pick. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Royce, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. We can follow you on Twitter at Royce Young, read your stuff at Daily Thunder, and also on ESPN.com. Thanks a lot for coming on.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.